Sí.
Quiero presentarles a un personaje del que hemos hablado, Georgian Gaudreau. Él fue un boina verde que fue contratado para acabar con el régimen de Nicolás Maduro. Esa operación se llamó Operación Gedeón. El interés era sacar a Maduro del poder. Había mucho dinero de por medio, había compañeros de él expertos en el tema, y el plan fracasó. El plan fracasó. Terminó muy mal este plan. Lo primero es saludar a nuestro invitado, que muy gentilmente atiende esta entrevista. Georgian, hello, good morning, and welcome to W Radio.
Good morning, thank you for having me.
You were born in Canada?
Yes.
Okay. For how many years did you train yourself to be a boina verde?
For how long did you train yourself to become a green Bennett?
Oh, wow. Well, the training is, it's all-encompassing. And so once you have to go into the Army, and then the schooling starts, it can be anywhere from a year to 2 years. And so my specialty was, you do a secondary skill. Mine was medicine. And so our medical course is an extra year. So on top of the unconventional warfare training and the initial phase of training. But the truth is, as a Green Beret, half of our skill set has to do with direct operations and what you would think of as, combat. Some of us get selected to do intelligence work. And so this is essentially what separates Green Berets from some of the other special forces units like Navy SEALs, Rangers, things of that nature. And so I was chosen to do several follow-on schools as it pertains to intelligence work.
Let me translate, please. Grace, ¿qué dice nuestro boina verde?
Dice que nació en Canadá y sobre el tiempo que duró entrenándose, dice que pues el entrenamiento de la escuela dura como un año o dos años, dependiendo de la especialidad. Él quiso inclinarse por la medicina, entonces hizo un año extra adicional a esa fase inicial que tienen los demás. Nos dice que pues las habilidades también se obtienen de esas operaciones directas en combate y también por las operaciones de inteligencia que se seleccionan también para hacer estos trabajos de inteligencia, y eso es lo que separa a estos boinas verdes de otros.
Ana, mi relación con los boinas verdes pues está con Sylvester Stallone, ¿no? Y con Arnold Schwarzenegger, con mi ídolo Jason Statham. ¿Qué tanto se parece él a esos personajes de esos comandos de Rambo que vemos en la televisión y en el cine?
The host of the show, he seems to watch a lot of TV and movies. So his relationship with Green Berets is Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he wonders how much...
Jason Statham,
I'm sorry. How much of them do you think is true or resembles the work that you do?
So, obviously, I would say half of it, right? And so Green Berets are combat soldiers, but like I said, there's an intelligence component that's not widely talked about and that's not known. People don't typically see us coming, right? The whole point of Green Berets is to work by, with, and through locals in order to, I guess what you would say, synergize an army, to make it stronger, to force multiply an army.
Grace.
Pues responde que es mitad de eso, la similitud. El boina verde es un soldado de combate, pero también hay un componente de inteligencia del que no se habla y que la gente ignora. Nos dice que su componente más importante es que las personas no los ven venir, trabajan y se camuflan con los locales para poder hacer su trabajo.
Pero, Ana, un grupo de 8 boinas verdes como él y 7 compañeros, ¿están en la capacidad de llegar a un presidente custodiado, capturarlo y sacarlo? ¿8 tipos pueden hacer eso?
Let's speak about 8 Green Berets. Do you believe that 8 Green Berets working together have the capability of going and trying to take out a president that's so guarded as it is, Nicolas Maduro?
I believe in a concept called One Spartan, One War. The Spartans, once they were defeated by Athens, they broke apart. And so Spartans would go and help and assist other armies for money, kind of like mercenaries. But it wasn't just generalship. It was also embedding themselves in the training of that country. So do I believe that eight? Quite easily, yes. But I also believe one. This mission, if you look at the nature of coups, there's really three types of coups. There's more, but let's be specific. There's only three types of coups. The first coup was attempted by the opposition government, Juan Guaido and Leopoldo Lopez, on 30 April. And it failed because they didn't have military support. The second type of coup is really just a military invasion. This is what Eric Prince is trying to shop now, and he was shopping 4 years ago. The second type of coup, the last type of coup is what I chose and templated this to be, which was essentially a military coup. And it was an intelligence operation. This entire Operation Gideon was a smaller tactical mission. The overarching operation, which was a strategic operation, had a different name. But let's go back to Operation Gideon. Operation Gideon was an intelligence-based mission. It had everything to do with the connections that I had made inside of Venezuela, who were very powerful generals, who trusted one of the men I was working with, who I had a very close relationship with. His name was General Cliver Alcala. General Cliver Alcala was the linchpin of my operation. And so the generals that I had made very powerful alliances with that were next to Maduro, once the Americans, which was very confusing, once they arrested General Cliver Alcala, it confused and I lost a lot of credibility inside of Venezuela. And so this is ultimately was the beginning of the end of the operation. It's why the operation was doomed.
Grace, ¿qué dijo sobre? Bueno, algo impresionante. Le entendí que ocho no, que uno solo podría tumbar a Maduro.
Sí, eso dijo, y también explicó los diferentes tipos de golpes que se pueden dar, primero por la oposición como Guaidó o Leopoldo, que fracasaron por el apoyo, porque no tenían el apoyo militar, también está pues tumbarlo por la vía militar, y nos dice que la última que él escogió es esta operación de inteligencia, y explicando más, digamos en detalle de qué se trató la operación Gedeón, dice que es una operación de inteligencia con las conexiones que él hizo dentro de Venezuela con poderosos militares como el general Cliver Alcalá, que era su contacto en la operación. Entonces era muy importante tener esas alianzas con los generales cercanos a Maduro, pero una vez arrestaron a Cliver Alcalá, pues él perdió credibilidad dentro de Venezuela y ahí comenzó, digamos, el final de esa operación.
Sí, aquí hablamos con Cliver Alcalá, Ana, como usted recuerda, y él nos contó cómo funcionó la operación. Fue una entrevista, pues, muy importante. Ana, ¿a él lo contrata y le paga Cliver Alcalá o directamente Guaidó?
Who contracted you? Cliver Alcalá and who contracted you and who paid you? Cliver Alcalá or was it Guaidó's team?
So, this began with I guess you would say a partnership between Leopoldo Lopez, Juan Guaido, working with a U.S. Company called Global Governments. So I guess you could say, so I was recruited by an American, and I was pulled into a meeting with Leopoldo Lopez's strategists, Lester Toledo, George Betancourt. Ultimately, their contract, there were obviously commercial interests. I was brought into the room because I was, I guess, somebody had recognized me or somebody had, was passed on that I do this, this is the nature of work that I do, mostly intelligence type work. And so I was brought into the room to see if it was even possible. This is obviously after the 30 April debacle, in La Calle, the popular rebellion that failed. I was brought in to see if there was another solution that could be done. So ultimately, that's how I was recruited. The contract came after the fact, and this was Juan Guaido. Once these negotiations broke down, obviously Leopoldo Lopez and Juan Guaido work together, and because they work together, so they got another crack at it. But ultimately, from the Venezuelan opposition standpoint, they just needed a guy to flip the country. They didn't need business contracts. And so the contract and I was signed by Guido, and that was really the second start to the operation, if you will.
I'm sorry, before you continue, you said that Guaido and Lopez had a partnership with global governments, a company in the U.S. Who's behind that company? Do you know?
Yeah, so there's Herman Chica. This is all open source. Like, you can look them up. Nestor Sainz.
But it's not the government.
No, they would. No, they're in D.C., but they work with governments. And so.
And those are Venezuelan citizens? Herman Chica?
No, so they're U.S. It's a U.S.-based company.
Grace, ¿qué dijo Jordan?
Que esto comenzó en una alianza entre Leopoldo López y Juan Guaidó y en alianza también con una compañía estadounidense que se llama Global Governments. Menciona Herman Chica y Nestor Sainz, si le entendí bien, que están en Washington, D.C., que pues no están directamente en el gobierno, pero que trabajan también con el gobierno. Nos dice que pues él se reunió con un estratega de Leopoldo que se llama Lester Toledo y nos dice que pues el contrato tenía un interés comercial, pero a él lo llamaron básicamente porque alguien pues lo recomendó, le dijeron o les contaron de la naturaleza de su trabajo, que es básicamente de inteligencia. Entonces básicamente él fue allí a esa reunión a ver si era posible hacerlo y pues traer esa solución sobre la mesa distinta a las que ya se habían intentado. Entonces el contrato llegó después con Juan Guaidó y luego pues se rompieron esas negociaciones de ese trabajo conjunto que habían hecho Guaidó y Leopoldo. Entonces básicamente lo que quería la oposición era alguien que volteara al país, y pues el contrato que firmaron era como la segunda parte de toda esa operación.
Ana, él usó hace poco la palabra mercenarios. ¿A él le molesta que le digan mercenario?
Does it bother you when you're called a mercenary?
It does, but, you know, it's a great spin. I understand it. So the enemies of, essentially the people who tanked this operation, they needed to spin this in the media. And they did a great job. Once this mission fell apart, obviously my priority changed to getting my men back. So the simple answer is absolutely. I've received no pay for this operation. What's more is my team and I, some incredibly brave Venezuelans and Americans, received no pay. Mercenaries get paid. I don't know that anybody understood the intent of this operation. I even think the people who signed the contract with me, they didn't understand the intent of the operation. I think they thought that we were going to send some small force in the Caribbean Sea to try to do some crazy assassination attempt. But the truth is, you don't attack a country with like 60 guys in fishing boats. So quite simply, this small mission, Gideon, was just a link up. This was just a catalyst for the larger operation. Obviously, we were infiltrated, but I think it would be interesting to note that who I believe infiltrated us and who I've seen the evidence of, when we talked about the contract, for instance, after that meeting, and I've seen this in some of the discovery, after that meeting, Leopoldo Lopez's men, Lester Toledo and George Betancourt, spoke with two CIA individuals. Now, I wasn't aware of this at the time. After the fact, when we were in Colombia planning the operation, they had admitted to me that they were working with CIA. And so when we look at the life cycle of the operation, it lasted a year and a half to build all these contacts. It's obvious to me now that I've seen the discovery in the court documents that the CIA were essentially surveilling this and had assets in this project for the duration. There were men in the camps, and there were men in the boats who were most likely CIA assets.
Grace.
Pues nos dice que sí le molesta que los llamen mercenarios porque ni a él ni a nadie de su equipo le pagaron y a los mercenarios les pagan normalmente. Entonces sí le molesta ese término. Nos dice que nadie entiende realmente cómo la intención de esa operación, porque pues cuando se firmó lo que querían hacer era una avanzada. nos dice que esa operación de los que todos decían que eran unos hombres o una fuerza pequeña que llegaron al Mar Caribe a hacer un intento loco de asesinato, pues no es tan así, porque ellos no están tratando de, en ese momento, de atacar un país, sino más bien de llevar o planear una operación mucho más grande. Era como un paso antes a esa operación más grande que querían hacer, y nos dice que ellos evidentemente fueron infiltrados, y es interesante saber quién los infiltró. Y cuando se habla del contrato y después de esa reunión con Leopoldo, que estaba Lester Toledo, que es el asesor o el estratega de Leopoldo, pues él le comentó de una reunión con la CIA, y admitieron también posteriormente haber trabajado con la CIA. Entonces, cuando él mira todo este ciclo y toda esta construcción de contactos que hicieron durante un año y medio, es obvio para él el interés que también tenía la CIA, y pues los hombres en el campo y los botes también que tenían esa relación con la CIA.
Vamos a hablar de esa relación con la CIA, pero antes, Ana, él habla de Colombia, y Cleaver nos contó que las armas las recogió en Colombia y ellos se escondieron en Colombia, Cleaver y nuestro invitado, se entrenaron en Colombia. ¿El gobierno o alguna autoridad colombiana participó de esto?
You mentioned General Alcala, and you mentioned that you guys trained part of this in Colombia. At any point, did somebody from the Colombian government get involved in any way with this operation?
That's funny you should mention that, because Iván Duque, so what was represented to us, there was a meeting that we had. There was a large meeting, and a couple ex-Venezuelan generals were in the meeting. George Betancourt, Lester Toledo, so Leopoldo's people were in the meeting. And this was very early on, one of my first trips to Colombia. I was obviously there. General Cleaver Alcala was there, and a few others. In this meeting, we discussed the Colombian involvement, and it was represented to myself and General Alcala that Iván Duque would provide us, and this is relevant, he would provide us three things. He would provide us camps where we could train, which he did. He would provide us safe passage across the border, obviously the Colombian-Venezuelan border, and the ability to ship anything we needed to across the country, whatever we needed.
That means arms.
Arms, equipment, whatever was in that scope. Now, the contingency was this, and this is the, again, this plays into, we needed to attack the ELN.
Bueno, Grace, aquí hay una respuesta, como él dijo, relevante.
Is this relevant?
No. It is relevant. It is very relevant.
It is relevant.
Very relevant.
You are mentioning the president of Colombia.
I am. Yeah. So what you have to realize is there were several people in this meeting, and several people heard this. These representations, I think at one point he was on speakerphone, mm-hmm. and I certainly, I had heard his voice on speakerphone. It was represented that he was who he said he was, and when this was taking place.
And you remember any other name of any Colombian person who was in that meeting?
I don't know if you guys would know this name, but Uribe?
He was in the meeting?
He was not in the meeting, but representations were made.
Who represents Uribe in the meeting?
So, Lester Toledo. Mm-hmm. These were the representations being made to me. And so what had happened was, they had a meeting with Uribe and Duque. So when I say they, Lester Toledo and George Betancourt, it was they made these representations to me. They asked me if I wanted to meet, and I typically don't want to meet principals. I don't. Mm-hmm. That's not what I do. For instance, when I'm given authority by, when it's told to me that I'm given authority by the executive, by my executive, the executive branch, I do not want to meet the executive. I need to provide deniability. I have to have the leadership intact, and mm-hmm. where they can say, no, I don't know this guy.
Let me translate, Jordan, because it's very important what you just said. Grace, ¿qué dijo?
Dice que es chistoso que lo mencione porque sí recuerda el nombre de Iván Duque. Nos dice que en la reunión grande que tuvieron con ex generales de Venezuela, con los representantes de Leopoldo, y esos primeros viajes que hizo a Colombia, en el cual pues también estaba Cliver Alcalá y otros, discutieron el cómo iba a estar Colombia involucrado en todo esto. Entonces les dijeron que Iván Duque les iba a dar tres cosas, el presidente colombiano: campos en donde ellos pudieran entrenar, que de hecho dice que se les dio, que también se les iba a dar paso seguro en la frontera de Colombia y Venezuela, y poder traer a Colombia todo lo que necesitaran. Armas, equipos, absolutamente en todo, pero tenía una contingencia y era que tenían que atacar al ELN. Nos dice que había mucha gente en esa reunión, mucha gente escuchó lo que nos está diciendo, nos dice que en un punto estuvo en speaker, que escuchó la voz en speaker diciendo que era quien era, y pues le pregunta a Julio si algún otro nombre salió a relucir. Dice que hubo otra persona que salió a relucir y era Uribe, y pues le preguntaba a Julio que si Uribe estaba en la reunión. Él dice que tenía representantes y menciona nuevamente a Lester Toledo, que decía que se habían reunido con Uribe y Duque. Y eso fue, pues, en resumidas cuentas lo que nos cuenta, que a él no le gusta reunirse con el Ejecutivo, pero pues en este caso lo hizo.
El nombre de Toledo es muy importante y clave en lo que nos afirma nuestro invitado. Están escuchando ustedes a Jordan Gaudreau, que fue el jefe de un comando Boinas Verdes, que tenían como misión sacar del poder a Nicolás Maduro. Ana, ¿sacarlo vivo o muerto?
When you guys think about this operation to take Maduro out, was the plan to take him out alive, dead, or?
Okay, so this is the interesting part of it. And this goes back to the whole mercenary. I don't design operations. I like bloodless operations. I don't want anybody to get hurt, killed, any of that generates bad press. And so in my mind, this was always a bloodless operation. This is why I chose the military coup style operation, because largely it's Venezuelans doing the heavy lifting. I employ the strategy. So in my mind, this was always going to be a very simple operation, and it would have been had it not been for those meddling kids. I don't know if you guys have Scooby-Doo in Colombia, but so give me your question one more time and let me...
Preguntale si era vivo, muerto, yeah, o como fuera.
Yeah, do you want Maduro alive or dead?
I wanted Nicolas Maduro alive. There were a lot of people, I mean, everybody in that room wanted him dead. I needed him alive. I needed him alive to justify and to validate the actual change of leadership. If it's Venezuelan generals flipping the country, it's more valid than a group of people invading Venezuela. That's the Eric Prince template. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It does work. Obviously the popular rebellion, the first way they tried it didn't work. But when you have Venezuelans toppling their own country, this is a more valid and a more digestible way to change government. Everybody knows that Nicolas Maduro fakes elections. We know he's a strong man. He's a tyrant. We know these things. And it's justifiable. And it's actually constitutional in the Venezuelan constitution. It's actually written in the American Declaration of Independence. In the event of a tyrannical regime, it's not just a right to overthrow a tyrant. It is a duty for those citizens.
¿Qué dijo Grace?
Pues nos responde que él no le gusta diseñar operaciones con que derramen sangre. Nos dice que eso genera mal prensa. Entonces él siempre pensó que esta operación debería no ser sangrienta. Él escogió este golpe militar pensando en que los mismos venezolanos pues la finalizaran. Su estrategia estaba en toda la parte de la inteligencia. Nos dice que en su mente iba a ser una operación bastante fácil, y él quería que Nicolás Maduro saliera vivo, porque todo el mundo en esa reunión, en ese cuarto en el que él estuvo, lo quería muerto, y él lo quería vivo, porque es más fácil justificar y validar ese cambio de liderazgo si viene desde los mismos generales venezolanos que están cambiando el país. Nos dice que pues evidentemente es posible sacar un presidente invadiéndolo, pero nos dice que es mucho más válido cuando esas personas están dentro de Venezuela y cuando son los mismos venezolanos que tratan de hacer ese cambio. Todos sabemos que Maduro es un tirano, que es una persona fuerte, que pues hizo elecciones fraudulentas, pero pues en la constitución en Venezuela ese régimen tirano pues debe ser removido por los mismos venezolanos.
Ana, pero hay algo que no entiendo. Cualquiera, a cualquier autoridad de los Estados Unidos, estaría de acuerdo con sacar a Maduro del poder, a como diera lugar. Él tiene cómo probar que fue una agencia de los Estados Unidos como la CIA la que se tiró el plan.
If we think from the U.S. perspective and what's been said, they would have every interest in having Maduro out of Venezuela. You mentioned the CIA, but do you have any evidence to prove that a U.S. agency was the one that doomed this whole project?
Wow, glad you asked. I absolutely do, and it's startling. It's startling. I've seen it firsthand. I haven't released it yet. I think that's more up for my lawyers to release. That's more for them to decide that. But yes, there is a plethora of evidence.
Sí, la respuesta es afirmativa, Grace. Hay evidencia.
Sí, tienen evidencias de que fue la CIA. Le agrada la pregunta porque él ha visto de primera mano toda esa evidencia que no han revelado y que él dice que no va a revelar porque le corresponde más a los abogados.
Por lo que yo he escuchado, Grace, en declaraciones que él ha dado, él dice que pues sí fue una agencia de Estados Unidos con apoyo de Leopoldo y Guaidó. Y esa parte me confunde. ¿Por qué razón si los que lo contratan son Guaidó y Leopoldo luego deciden tomar acciones que podrían dañar la operación? Jordan, from what I've heard, you've mentioned that Guaidó and Leopoldo López collaborated to an extent with these U.S. agencies. And what I don't understand is if they were the people that contracted you, why would they collaborate with an agency that was going to destroy the whole plan?
So there's two reasons. You have to understand that Leopoldo López, Juan Guaidó, have different interests. So does the CIA. The CIA has different interests. Okay, and so the CIA's interest, if you think about it, so at a higher level, Gina Haspel at the CIA, working with Juan Cruz, they're very close, even Secretary of State, they were working against Donald Trump in many capacities, and you can see this. It's obviously, a lot of this is beyond the scope of this conversation, but you see a lot of, I guess you would say, moves that were made by the CIA that were against Donald Trump, to hurt Donald Trump. This, when I look at everything in aggregate over the last 4 years, this was used to hurt Donald Trump. They would not, you know, his enemies in Washington, who were very powerful, did not want him to have a win in South America. Now, if you look at Juan Guaidó and Leopoldo López's interests, some of those are aligned, some of them are separate. But largely, they were afraid that, I believe that Juan Guaidó was afraid that Cliver Alcala would have assumed power in Venezuela had the coup been successful, because quite frankly, Venezuelans did not like and trust Juan Guaidó. They may not have trusted Cliver Alcala, but certainly the army did. And for Leopoldo López, really it's about wanting to have power in Venezuela. And he'll step on and destroy anybody else who they perceive would have power in the event of a regime change. So it's a little complex, but it all comes down to power and money. The other part to it is this. Juan Guaidó was making a lot of money from the U.S. government. So was Leopoldo López. This is evidenced in the Delaware lawsuit. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Juan Guaidó is being sued by several prominent U.S. contractors for billions of dollars because that money has gone missing. And yet, Juan Guaidó has not been brought up on criminal charges, so he is protected in the United States, as is Leopoldo López. So we're talking about men in powerful positions who have interests that are outside of the American people or outside of the current president. Does that make sense?
Pues lo que nos responde es que son dos razones por las cuales pues dañarían la operación, y es básicamente que los intereses eran distintas. Las de Leopoldo López, la de Juan Guaidó y los de la CIA también tenían intereses muy distintos. Entonces nos dice que pues mirando ya en los últimos 4 años en retrospectiva, nos puede decir que Donald Trump tenía enemigos muy poderosos dentro de la CIA que no querían que Donald Trump lograra ese cambio en Sudamérica. Entonces nos dice que son personas muy poderosas que lo que querían hacer era lastimar a Donald Trump y que estaban trabajando en contra de Donald Trump. Y en cuanto a Guaidó, a Leopoldo, tenían intereses en común, pero también intereses por separado. Nos dice que Guaidó temía que Cliver Alcalá asumiera el poder una vez, digamos, hiciera ese golpe, y Leopoldo López pues lo que quería era tener el poder en Venezuela y destruir a cualquier otro que él percibía podía tener ese poder luego de un cambio del régimen. Entonces es bastante complejo, pero se resume en poder y dinero. Nos dice que Juan Guaidó estaba haciendo mucho dinero y Leopoldo López también por el gobierno de Estados Unidos. Nos dice que Guaidó ha sido demandado por muchos personas que los contrataron en los Estados Unidos por miles de millones de dólares, por dinero que se perdió y está siendo protegido en los Estados Unidos, al igual que Leopoldo, y son hombres muy poderosos con intereses fuera de los Estados Unidos y lejanos del actual presidente.
Grace, nosotros tuvimos la oportunidad de entrevistar también a JJ Rendón acá, y mencionaba ahorita Jordan a Juan Guaidó y a JJ Rendón. En una reunión que tuvieron ellos, le dieron la espalda al proyecto. Ana, ¿puede preguntarle a Jordan por qué le dieron la espalda a la operación?
We believe you also mentioned JJ Rendón, mm-hmm. and of course Guaidó, but in the case of JJ Rendón, why did they go ahead and, you know, stop supporting or did not support the operation?
So they supported the operation the entire time. Obviously, they wanted, if it succeeded, they wanted to be able to say that we did this. JJ Rendón was a signatory on the contract between myself and Juan Guaidó. Obviously, if it failed, they wanted deniability and say, we didn't want anything to do with this, and we told him not to do it. But at no time was I ever, anybody in my team ever contacted to stop moving forward with the operation at any time. After the operation was sabotaged, JJ Rendón was a source of many media articles, and this can be evidenced, in the Vice article. He was obviously AP's source, several other articles. So he largely directed the false narrative against what happened after Gideon. But that's what Rendón does, right? That's his bread and butter. In Latin America, he is called the master of black media. And so, there's a CNN article with Rendón talking about spreading rumors, and he brags about it. Por supuesto, I make rumors. And then there's a second article with a different news organization where he says, no, I don't spread rumors at all, ever. This is the nature of his work. And so this was why there's so much news that is so false and it's so confusing about what happened. And everything about Gideon got put on my shoulders and my team's shoulders.
Pues nos dice que ellos apoyaron la operación todo el tiempo, entonces lo que querían era básicamente decir si era exitosa, nosotros hicimos todo esto, fue nuestro logro, pero JJ Rendón firmó el contrato junto a él y Juan Guaidó. Entonces nos dice que lo que querían era que si fracasaba, pues ya simplemente decir no tuvimos nada que ver con esto, dijimos que no lo hicieran, pero él nos puede decir que nadie de su equipo ni él fue contactado para que en ningún momento pararan la operación. Después del sabotaje de la operación, JJ Rendón pues fue la fuente de muchos artículos en medios de comunicación, menciona de AP, de Vice y otros, así que él dirigió como que esa narrativa que salió después del fracaso de la operación Gedeón, y nos dice que eso es lo que él hace. JJ Rendón es llamado el maestro de la prensa negra, o generar esta pues información en los medios de comunicación que él llama negra u oscura. Nos dice que Rendón salió hablando en CNN sobre esparcir rumores, sobre si él lo que hacía era esparcir rumores, y él respondía que sí, con orgullo. Entonces después lo salió negando en otro medio de comunicación, pero esa sí es la naturaleza de su trabajo, como revelar todas esas noticias falsas y confusas, y al final pues le dieron la responsabilidad a ellos de lo que había pasado.
Le quiero preguntar desde Washington, usted menciona al expresidente Iván Duque, ¿usted se reunió alguna vez con él, o cómo fue, o con quién fueron esas reuniones y dónde?
In terms of what you mentioned about Duque and did you ever meet with him, or did you ever meet a representative of him that was not Mr. Toledo?
Mr. Toledo, he had his phone on, obviously on speakerphone, and the representations were made. And so I heard his voice, and I heard him on the phone and whatnot. But that's, they wanted me to meet with him. I was hesitant. like I said, being in the room with presidents of countries is not what I want to do. Obviously, with Juan Guaido, it was unavoidable. I needed the contract signed and linkage. But I do know that this had happened on several occasions. And I do know that they met with President Duque. And they have
Do you have a copy of that contract?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do know that they're close friends. So, obviously, J.J. Rendon is close friends with Iván Duque, Uribe, Santos, because he is one of their campaign election strategists. He is their, for lack of a better word, propagandist.
Yeah. Grace, traducción.
El señor Toledo tenía el teléfono en altavoz, entonces esas representaciones se hicieron, escuchó su voz y querían que se reuniera con él, estar en un cuarto con él, pero nos dice que a él no le gusta reunirse con presidente de países, es algo que no le gusta hacer. Con Guaidó era inevitable porque necesitaba el contrato firmado, y nos dice que pues sí supo que en varias ocasiones ellos se reunieron con Duque y sabe que son amigos cercanos con JJ Rendón porque pues es el estratega político de Uribe, Duque, Santos.
Ana, yo le quiero preguntar desde Caracas, unas semanas antes de lo ocurrido en marzo de 2020 con esa operación Gedeón, Diosdado Cabello, quien es hoy ministro de Interior, había develado parte de ese plan. ¿Por qué ellos decidieron continuar adelante?
A few weeks before the doomed of this project, Diosdado Cabello in Venezuela revealed publicly part of the, you know, the strategy of this plan. If it was already revealed, parts of it, why did you guys move forward with it?
Okay, so there's two reasons, quite simply. So, well, let's ask this, who revealed it, right? And so that's pretty obvious to answer that. This is going to be the people in the Guaidó Leopoldo camp because they wanted it stopped. Okay. Now that we've said that, let's discuss the nature of what that information was. So you said strategic. That information had no strategy in it, right? It simply was what we call military. It was, how many people we had and some of the leadership. That was basically it. It's a task organization. So I've operated hundreds. I've planned and led hundreds of operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. The enemy always knew that information about us. They always knew we had 30 guys. So that information was not what we would label strategic information. In a military capacity, really, it's time and place. Like, where are the operations going to happen, when it's going to happen? This is specific data that's relevant. Here's the second part to your question. Once Cliver Alcala was arrested, I aborted the operation. I had to, because the people inside Venezuela, my powerful allies, were very nervous. That said, because my forces were on the border of Colombia and Venezuela, we were caught between a rock and a hard place. It's a dilemma. I had a bad decision to make, and I had an even worse decision to make. The ELN were now hunting my men. The Colombian military, thanks to Iván Duque and his close partnership with the Venezuelan opposition, were now hunting my men. They could not go back. You familiar with Macbeth? I've waded in blood so deep that to turn back now would be the gravest of errors. We had to move forward simply because going backwards, my men would have been captured, killed, God knows what. The ELN is not a recognized government. The operation was not completely destroyed, but the efficacy of the operation was greatly reduced. I made the decision to move forward because moving backwards would have been certain death. So we moved forward with the operation, and ultimately that's why. The ELN was told that we were there to kill the ELN. Do you remember when I talked about Iván Duque wanting us to attack the ELN? Well, it was quite simple for them to tell the ELN, these guys are here to attack you. And so for the last 3 weeks, my men were hiding from these forces because they were trying to hunt them. So they were dying to get out of there. For my part, my boat, when I was going to get my Americans out, I was doing everything I could to exfiltrate my men. My mission became get my two American Green Berets out of there. My boat broke, which again is a source of controversy because it was reported that there was CIA on the island before we left. So in my mind, there's a possibility It's conjecture, but there's a possibility that the CIA actually sabotaged my boat. The CIA, the opposition government, would have known, and it was quite obvious, that it was impossible for us to go back, and we had to move forward. They knew that, because they knew where my men were. We were infiltrated in the camps. This is also reported in the media, but I also have information that corroborates this multiple source reporting. So ultimately, the decision was really tough, because it's one of those times in life where there's no good decision. We call it a dilemma.
Bueno, acá responde que hay dos razones por las cuales decidió seguir adelante con la operación. Es importante pues preguntarse quién lo reveló, y puede ser obvio que la gente de Guaidó y Leopoldo, porque querían que lo pararan. Pues esa es la naturaleza, digamos, de la información estratégica que se da. Nos dice que la información estratégica para él que ellos tenían no era tan importante, porque era simplemente información militar de cuánta gente tenían y algo del liderazgo de la operación. Pero nos da un ejemplo de las cientos de operaciones que ha liderado en Irak y en Afganistán. Nos dice que el enemigo por lo general decía que sabía esa información, de cuántos tipos había, pero no tenían la información que él llama estratégica, que es esa información de tiempo y lugar, de cuándo y dónde se llevará a cabo, que son datos específicos que sí son relevantes de una operación. Y la segunda parte que nos dice es que cuando Cliver Alcalá fue arrestado, él abortó la operación. Pues sus aliados dentro de Venezuela estaban muy nerviosos, porque él estaba dentro de ese dilema en la frontera entre Colombia y Venezuela. Estaba entre tomar una mala decisión o una decisión peor. Nos dice que el ELN estaba yendo tras sus hombres. Recordemos que Iván Duque le pidió a ellos ir tras ELN. El ELN, entonces, fue bastante fácil para ellos decirles al ELN que sus hombres estaban yendo tras ellos. Y entonces nos decía que era un peor error no seguir adelante y retroceder simplemente por ese riesgo que estaban enfrentando su equipo, porque nos dice que pues esa operación no podía echarse para atrás, tenía que seguir adelante, porque además el ejército colombiano, los militares colombianos también lo estaban buscando. Entonces irse para atrás era básicamente la muerte. Entonces nos dice que ellos los estaban cazando y por eso pues siguió en adelante. También habla del saboteo en el bote que se registró en los medios de comunicación, que se reportó que la CIA estaba en la isla antes de que se fueran. Entonces nos dice que pudo haber sido la CIA, el gobierno de la oposición, porque ellos tenían conocimiento de que era imposible para nuestro invitado y su equipo retractarse, tenían infiltrados sus campos, y pues él puede corroborar toda esta información que nos está diciendo. Entonces nos dice que fue una decisión dura, pero pues básicamente no tenía otra escapatoria.
Sí, nos escribe el presidente Iván Duque, que está escuchando la entrevista, y niega absolutamente todo lo que dice Jordan. President Duque is listening the interview, and he's saying that he doesn't know what you're talking about. He has no idea who is Rendon. He has no any contact with Rendon. Never. He doesn't know Mr. Rendon. He never has been on the telephone with Lester. He never has been in the telephone with Rendon. Do you remember, the President Duque asked, any other name of some person of his government that maybe was in contact with you? Because he doesn't know anything about it.
Wow, you mean he's not telling the truth? Interesting. I have a photo.
He's telling that you are not telling the truth.
Right, that's interesting. Yeah.
He doesn't know Lester, and he doesn't know Rendon.
I have a photo of Lester, Duque, and Juan Guaidó, and they look pretty chummy that I'll send to you after this.
Okay.
I've got it in my archive, but I think it's rather fantastical to assume that these individuals, well, his comments are fantastical, and unfortunately for him, they're easily disproven.
Bueno, Grace, lo que dice es que él tiene una foto donde está Guaidó, está Lester y está el presidente Duque, y que en la fotografía se ven bastante cómodos. Escucho un tono como burlón, ¿no, Grace? En el sentido de que el presidente diga que no sabía nada de lo que estamos hablando, ¿no?
Sí, él dice presidente no está diciendo la verdad y que suenan fantásticos sus comentarios porque pues nuestro invitado tiene cómo probar lo que está diciendo.
Señor Goodrow, en el momento en que se conoció esta historia, el estratega JJ Rendón habló con la W y él dijo que usted era quien se había acercado a prestar servicios, que usted era quien había asegurado que tenía el respaldo del gobierno de los Estados Unidos y que ellos se dieron cuenta que usted estaba haciendo una falsa oferta ya cuando había pasado un tiempo y era claro que usted no iba a cumplir. ¿Usted fue quien se acercó, quien los buscó?
Right when this happened, we spoke to JJ Rendon, and he said that you were the one that contacted them, that you were the one that reached out to them, and that at some point the U.S. realizes that you're offering this, it's not going to happen, and that's when they intervene. Was it like that? Were you the person that contacted them instead of the other way around, as you have shared today?
I don't know where I would have gotten Juan Guaido's phone number. Furthermore, I have probably two witnesses who would testify to the fact that they came to me. Both global governments came to me. I have another witness who can testify that says under oath that global governments reached out to me. They recruited me. Furthermore, I have another two witnesses who will testify under oath that Juan Guaido came to me. I'm not interested in, I have never auditioned for work. People come to find me. The nature of my work is intelligence based. I don't advertise.
No sabe de dónde sacaría el teléfono de Juan Guaidó. Nos dice que más allá de eso tiene dos testigos que dirían que ellos fueron los que buscaron a Jordan. Nos dice que Global Governments lo buscaron a él y tiene un testigo que puede decir bajo juramento esto, que a él lo reclutaron. Nos dice que Juan Guaidó llegó a él y que él nunca audiciona para un trabajo. La gente lo busca porque precisamente lo que él hace es inteligencia y simplemente él no pues va detrás de ningún trabajo ofreciéndolo de esta manera.
And I would add, if you have a politician, a propagandist, and a soldier in the same room, and you are trying to figure out who is telling the truth or who is lying, I would argue that most Americans would trust the soldier, because we do not peddle in lies. Whereas it's well known that politicians and propagandists, that's their bread and butter. I'm a soldier. I do what I do because I believe in it, not for the money. I believe that Venezuela should be free. I believe that because I'm an American and we share similar constitutions. My team and I share the same values. This is why we did this operation for free, and we actually paid out of our own pocket.
I'm sorry that I interrupt you, but you guys were never going to get paid. Or was it because it failed that you did not get paid? Or since the beginning you were not going to get paid?
We had a contract where there was money, but largely the money was for after the fact. And so I have a suit right now suing J.J. Rendon for money that was promised initially. That said, my team and I kept moving forward with the operation because ultimately we believed in it. And furthermore, the opposition government kept saying they're going to pay me, you know, they're going to pay us, my company, to do this. But regardless, I made a promise to Venezuelan soldiers the first trip I made. I looked them in their eyes and I said, I will help you do this. As did Cliver Alcala, as did several other members of my team. We're soldiers. We're not politicians. We believe in doing what's right. The motto of my unit in Special Forces is De Oppresso Liber, free the oppressed.
Pues nos dice que agregaría que si uno tiene a un político, a un propagandista y a un soldado en un mismo cuarto, en una misma habitación, es fácil, digamos, adivinar quién dice la verdad y quién miente. Los estadounidenses confiarían en el soldado porque los soldados no pedalean en mentiras. Los políticos y estas personas encargadas de divulgar la propaganda, sí, nos dice que él, como es un soldado, lo hace porque simplemente cree que es lo correcto. Él cree que Venezuela debe estar libre. Nos dice que Venezuela y los Estados Unidos tienen constituciones similares y pues él y su equipo comparten los mismos valores. Él iba a hacer esto gratis, lo iba a hacer pues con dinero de su bolsillo, y le pregunta a Ana que si nunca le iban a pagar o si no le pagaron porque pues esta operación no fue exitosa. Dice que sí tenían un contrato con un dinero y de hecho tiene una demanda en contra de JJ Rendón por un dinero que le prometieron al inicio, y ellos decidieron seguir adelante con la operación porque pues en la oposición les decían que les iban a pagar, pero también ellos tenían esa promesa con los militares venezolanos en ese primer viaje que hizo, en donde lo miraron a los ojos y también junto a Cliver Alcalá para decirles sobre esta operación. Entonces nos reitera que son soldados, no políticos, y hacen lo que creen correcto.
Grace, él mencionó Eric Prince y él dijo que en ese momento estaban buscando una especie de intervención militar, y dijo durante sus primeras preguntas, si fue lo que yo le entendí, que es lo que actualmente están haciendo, que estarían actualmente buscando otra operación en Venezuela. ¿Fue eso lo que él dijo? Y de ser así, ¿qué tipo de operación estamos considerando? I believe, Jordan, that at some point in your first answers, you mentioned Eric Prince, and that he was looking to do a military intervention, not in the past, but towards the future. That is something they are planning for ahead of time. Is that what you said? And if it's that way, could we expect a military intervention in Venezuela?
So this is not, this is open source. This is, so I have seen in the past, when I was in J.J. Rendon's office, he handed me Eric Prince's proposal. So Eric Prince was shopping. There were several people back then who were shopping solutions to this problem. Most of them were military solutions. Mine was obviously an intelligence-based solution. This project from Eric Prince was $500 million a day. It was a military invasion. I believe that, yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, if you look at it, it's open source. It's no secret this is what he's trying to get funding for. And so I'm not saying, like, I'm not against this, but the reality is, if there's a military invasion, people are going to die. And when you have foreign forces who are going into Venezuela and taking it by force, like I said, it's not as digestible and it's not as palatable, especially for the American people, and that's, you're going to have to sell that through Congress. And again, my solution, or our solution, my team's solution, was a much more nuanced solution, which used Venezuelans to liberate their own country. And so I think that's why it would have been largely accepted by the international community. And that's why I believe the executive, I'm remiss to say, but that's why I was hired to do what I did. And I don't want to say who specifically wanted this done, but it was quite obvious his opponents in Washington really didn't want that victory for him.
Pues nos dice que esto es información que está abierta y se ha visto en el pasado, él ha visto en el pasado esa propuesta de JJ Rendón por parte de Eric Prince. Nos dice que en ese momento había mucha gente comprando esas soluciones, principalmente militares, para Venezuela. La propuesta de él era mucho más de inteligencia. El de Eric Prince era un proyecto de 500 millones al día, que era más una invasión militar, lo cual no es un secreto, es por lo cual está buscando financiamiento. Y nos dice que esa invasión militar a él no le suena porque la gente muere. Nos dice que son fuerzas extranjeras que entran a la fuerza a un país, y eso no es digamos que eso no lo asimila también la comunidad internacional. No es tan fácil explicárselo a los estadounidenses, hay que vender eso al Congreso. Entonces su solución y la de su equipo era más usar a los venezolanos para liberar a su propio país, que es mucho más aceptado en la comunidad internacional, y cree que por eso lo contrataron. Y no va a decir quién quería que esto no resultara, pero pues hay obviamente oponentes en Washington que no querían este triunfo para él.
Señor Goodrow, el 10 de enero Estados Unidos ofreció una recompensa de 25 millones de dólares por la captura de Nicolás Maduro. Parecería que la administración Trump está endureciendo la postura contra el régimen venezolano. ¿Cree que esta vez realmente hay un plan concreto para sacar a Maduro del poder? Y si es posible, ¿usted ha hablado con Trump?
So I don't know if you're aware that now they're offering $25 million to the capture of Nicolas Maduro. And it seems like it that the Trump administration is going to strengthen the, you know, the posture of the U.S. towards Venezuela. Do you believe that in the future there's going to be a concrete plan to take Maduro out of power? And at any point, have you had any communications with Trump?
So, okay, let's break this into pieces. There's a lot encapsulated in that question. So let's go with the first part. Let's talk through Venezuela. And most Americans, I would say most people don't understand why Venezuela is such a strategic country to ally with or partner with, or why it is such a geopolitical force. We all hear about the oil, and we hear about the resources, and we hear about gold and the coltan and all of these things. But it provides, additionally, it provides the United States and or its enemies or competitors, let's say, white space in the Caribbean Sea, and the proximity to the United States for the United States is alarming. So I don't know if you saw it a few months back, Russian subs were in the Caribbean Sea and they were refueling in Venezuela. Right? This is in the U.S. back door. So the geopolitical ramifications for Venezuela are incredibly significant as it pertains to the United States. So it is absolutely a certainty that the United States moving forward, and Donald Trump specifically, has to be cognizant and has to create plans to try to stabilize that region. For us, it's a tremendous problem. We downplay it in the media because obviously there's other problems in the world going on, Gaza and Ukraine and things of this nature. But you must realize that Latin America, to include Colombia and Brazil, are incredibly significant pieces to the geopolitical puzzle that Donald Trump faces moving forward.
And sorry, did you meet with Trump?
I would never meet with the executive. Listen, let me answer it this way. I was pressured to meet with Donald Trump on a few occasions back when this was happening. I was pressured by individuals who should never have pressured me, and this is really important. I refused. I graciously declined. Because I am who I am, I have to provide deniability. I have to. It is not good business for people to, and I believe that these individuals wanted a photo op. This mission was sabotaged to hurt Donald Trump and to not give him a victory in South America. His enemies would have wanted nothing more than to provide even more linkage than there was between me and Donald Trump, because there's enough linkage where they can essentially, with circumstantially, place him at the head of this. I believe that's why my team and I are being prosecuted now. These are incredibly brave people. Cliver Alcala, incredibly brave. Jaxie Alvarez, an incredibly brave woman who's done things that she has gone above and beyond what any normal human would do. She's incredibly brave. And the fact that we're being prosecuted now to remain a thorn in the side of Donald Trump is, and while these villains who actually staged this sabotage are protected by these government gangsters, I believe is a terrible, it's a miscarriage of justice.
Acaba de dar la noticia más jugosa de la entrevista sin querer queriendo. O sea, no es solamente el tema de la participación que deberá aprobar de la oposición, de las acusaciones que ha hecho a Guaidó, a López, sino acaba de decir Grace, si entendí muy bien, que todo esto era para no darle este trofeo a Donald Trump. Es decir, que la CIA se atravesó en esta operación para que no fuera un triunfo de Donald Trump. ¿Eso dijo?
Sí, señor, eso acaba de decir, lo había respondido ya también en otra respuesta, y él decía que pues quiere contestar esta pregunta por partes. Y la primera, en cuanto a Venezuela, él diría que la mayoría de los venezolanos no entienden por qué Venezuela es tan estratégico para ser un aliado, por qué es tan importante. Y él diría que es una fuerza geopolítica muy importante para los Estados Unidos, porque escuchamos siempre los recursos como el petróleo, como el oro, como el coltán, pero nos dice que Estados Unidos pues también tiene a Venezuela como un país importante porque pues tiene ese espacio en el Mar Caribe y que está muy cerca de los Estados Unidos. Y los rusos, nos dice, que pues estaban tanqueando en el Mar Caribe, ahí en Venezuela, detrás de los Estados Unidos, así que por eso para los Estados Unidos es tan importante Venezuela, y pues es una certeza que Donald Trump debe crear planes para estabilizar la región, porque pues es un problema tremendo que ahora pues se le baja la caña en los medios, porque está lo de Gaza, está lo de Ucrania, pero debemos darnos cuenta que para la región, para Latinoamérica, Brasil, Colombia, son muy significativos en el rompecabezas geopolítico de los Estados Unidos y para Donald Trump. Y sobre si se reunió con Donald Trump, él dice que él no se reúne con el Ejecutivo, que fue presionado por personas que no debieron presionarlo para reunirse con él en diferentes ocasiones, pero él lo rechazó de una manera amable, simplemente porque es algo que no hace, y puede que esta misión, como nos decía Julio, se cayó precisamente por eso, porque no querían darle esa victoria a Donald Trump en Sudamérica.
Ana, últimas preguntas muy cortas para respuestas muy cortas. ¿Quién es el responsable en la CIA de que la operación se cayera? Nombre y apellido para no darle el triunfo a Donald Trump.
This is for simple answers. Who's the person responsible in the CIA to doing this to not give Donald Trump this triumph in South America? Name and
specifically.
Yes.
Juan Cruz / Gina Haspel.
Wow. Yes.
I have evidence. Yeah. It's...
You have evidence of that? That you will provide in court at some point during your case?
No, to us.
To us?
I have to be careful because there is an ongoing court case.
Okay.
And I'm still trying to get classified information.
Bueno, pero ahí están los nombres. Juan Cruz, ¿no?
Sí, Juan Cruz y Gina Haspel.
Bueno. ¿Él nos va a dejar ver el contrato algún día?
Could you show us the contract?
Did you... Sure, absolutely. I'll send it to you on PDF.
Ah, bueno, listo.
Lo va a mandar en PDF.
Lo vamos a publicar. ¿Qué pasó con los compañeros de él capturados en Venezuela?
What happened to your colleagues that were captured in Venezuela?
I leave nobody behind. I still have several Venezuelans in...
But no Americans.
My two Americans, and this is really heartbreaking for me. I stayed out of everything. People, you know, I had to stay out of everything because it was the Biden administration, so I didn't have much to do with it. The Maduro regime wanted to trade them, actively wanted to trade my men back, but it took much longer because the Biden administration did not want them back. This has been relayed to me by several people who worked in the State Department, and so that was truly heartbreaking. My men are back now, and so that's great.
I'm sorry, when you say that, Julio, es que ustedes recuerdan el intercambio de prisioneros,
sí,
ahí regresaron sus hombres.
Pero es que él dijo que no había dejado ninguno allá.
Ahora, él dice que la administración Biden no quería que ellos volvieran.
Fue el cambio por Alex Saab, ¿no?
Pero ellos han sido sumamente criticados por eso, porque él, mm-hmm. ¿Por qué lo hubiese hecho ahora el gobierno
Biden? So that was the change with Alex Saab?
Exactly.
Sí.
But why? I mean, because you said the Biden administration did not want your man back.
No.
But Biden administration was very criticized for this prisoner swap because they ended up letting go Alex Saab, which was for some people
the major witness against Maduro.
Right. So obviously having my men back, let me put it this way. During the election, the run up to the election, were still reporting that my men were inside Venezuela. Now, I would say that would be a very important point to bring about, and that would have strengthened Biden's bid for re-election, had he talked about two Green Berets who he had negotiated the release of from Venezuela. That was swept under the carpet.
¿Qué dijo Grace?
Bueno, sobre qué pasó con los compañeros de él, él estaba respondiendo que no dejó a nadie atrás y habló sobre ese intercambio de los dos estadounidenses que se intercambiaron por Alex Saab. Y le preguntaba a Ana porque eso, Biden fue muy criticado por pues intercambiar a estos hombres por Alex Saab, y pues decía que durante las elecciones, pues este punto de los dos boinas verdes era muy importante para el expresidente Biden.
La foto del presidente Duque también nos la va a mostrar.
You're also going to send us a picture of Duque with... But don't forget.
Oh, I won't forget.
Una última pregunta, Ana. Si las críticas al gobierno de Maduro son por corrupción y por todo lo que ha pasado bajo un régimen que el mundo conoce, ¿qué futuro le ve a Venezuela si la oposición, según él, también actuó de manera corrupta?
When we think about Venezuela and the issues that it has had, I mean, one of the main things is corruption and what has done the government with the corruption and with the funds of the government. But you have alleged that the opposition is quite, well, corrupt itself. What future do you see for Venezuela if its own opposition, as you say, is corrupt?
This is the difficult problem for Donald Trump. In his first administration, he couldn't even trust the people around him. He didn't know who to trust. For instance, John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Gina Haspel, the people who were around him and close to him, he couldn't trust these individuals. They were working against him. So this time moving forward with Venezuela, President Trump has to do a better job of identifying the people from Venezuela that he can trust and he can't trust. Obviously, when you have Leopoldo Lopez and Juan Guaido vouching for individuals like Christopher Figueroa, who is the head of the Sabine, who is a torturer, there was a problem there. So moving forward, President Trump has to be very specific about who he trusts from the Venezuelan opposition.
Dice que este es el problema más difícil para Donald Trump, porque en la primera administración él no podía confiar en su gente alrededor. Menciona a John Bolton, a Mike Pompeo, a Gina Haspel. No podía confiar en estas personas que estaban realmente trabajando en contra de él. Así que Trump tiene que hacer un mejor trabajo para identificar en qué personas puede confiar de Venezuela y quiénes no. Nos dice que Leopoldo López y Guaidó tenían esta cercanía con Christopher Figueroa, que era la cabeza del Sebin, que era un torturador. Entonces hay que mirar bien a quién escoge.
Jordan, thank you very much for your time. Do you have kids?
Unfortunately, I do not.
Oh. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll be standing by for your contract, the photo, and the way you can prove all what you say explosive this morning here on W Radio. Thank you for your time, and happy rest of the day.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Thank you very much.